So today we are reading from Canto 11, Chapter 17, Text 29. Chapter 17 is entitled Description of the Varnashrama System. And we are reading Text 29 today. Shushrumana Acharyam Shushrumana Acharyam Sadopashitanichavat Sadopashitanichavat Yana Shayyasana Sthane Yana Shayyasana Sthane Nati Dure Kritanjali Nati Dure Kritanjali
Nati Dure Kritanjali
Sushrumana
Engaged in serving
Acharyam
The bona fide spiritual master
Sada
Always
Upashita
One should worship
Nichavat
as a humble servant.
Yana,
by humbly following behind the Guru when he is walking.
Shaya,
by taking rest with the spiritual master.
Asana,
sitting near the Guru to render service.
Sthane,
by standing and humbly waiting upon the Guru.
Na,
not.
Ati,
very.
Dure,
far away.
Kritanjali,
with folded hands.
Translation.
While engaged in serving the spiritual master, one should remain as a humble servant. And thus, when the Guru is walking, the servant should humbly walk behind. When the Guru lies down to sleep, the servant should also lie down nearby. And when the Guru has awakened, the servant should sit near him, massaging his lotus feet and rendering other similar services. When the Guru is sitting down on his asana, the servant should stand nearby with folded hands, awaiting the Guru's order. In this way, one should always worship the spiritual master. There is no purport to this verse. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Yelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaryam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangulam Gayate Shrim Yatripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhagavata Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, the 17th chapter, which is entitled Lord Krishna's Description of the Varnashrama System. It is a continuation of the Samvad which is happening between Lord Krishna and his dearmost disciple Uddhava. We have seen up till now how Lord Krishna has been explaining to Uddhava about the gradual progression of religious principles and the Varnashrama Dharma from Satya Yuga till the Treta Yuga and so on. He is explaining about the tenets of Varnashrama Dharma in this chapter. Now Varnashrama Dharma, as you all know, is a gradual process for elevating human beings to the platform of God consciousness by performing the various duties and occupations of the different Varnas and Ashramas. especially in this section of verses which are going on since the last few days, we see Krishna explaining about the importance of an acharya and who is a bona fide acharya and how it is important to serve an acharya and what are the pitfalls of taking the acharya wrongly or not serving him properly. So in this verse especially, we see that he is explaining to Uddhava that how a servant should serve his spiritual master by humbly standing beside him, by with folded hands, and by sitting down and massaging the guru's lotus feet, and like basically he's talking about all menial services which should be rendered to the spiritual master. So when we first read the translation, the first person who came to our mind was Narottam Das Thakur. Now, as you know, Narottam Das Thakur was a disciple of His Holiness Lokanath Goswami. And he wanted, Lokanath Goswami was very strict. He did not want to accept any disciples. But Narottam Das Thakur was very bent upon having Lokanath Goswami. He was very determined that he wants to have Lokanath Goswami as a spiritual master. So where Lokanath Goswami had a small bhajan kutir in a forest, and Narottam Das Thakur used to go there and render all sorts of menial services to his guru, as, you know, befitting the translation which is given over here in the Bhagavatam. He used to clean the guru's bhajan kuti and all these things in the absence of the guru, because Lokanath Goswami was so humble that he never used to accept any services from anybody. And even when Lokanath Goswami used to go to a particular spot in a forest to pass, to answer nature's call, after the spiritual master had left, Narottam Das Thakur would go to that place and clean up that place and keep it really nice and fresh for the next day's use by his guru. So when Lokanath Goswami realized that somebody is coming and cleaning this place, and how is it that always it's nice and fresh? And then one day he hid himself in the forest and he observed who is doing this. And he found Srila Narottam Das Thakur doing this. So Narottam Das Thakur was an epitome of menial service to his guru. But if we go to India, we will also see such things happening in India. And if we show this specially to some non-devotee or to some Kali, they will say, yeah, we also do all these things to our guru. We stand near our guru and we render so many services to our guru and all that. But is that the type of guru which Krishna is talking about in this verse? No, that is not the type of guru which Krishna is talking about. There are so many bogus gurus we see in India nowadays. And they take, you know, in fact they take the demand services from their disciples. That I want this service, I want that service. But that is not the type of spiritual master whom Krishna is referring to over here. The acharya which he is telling us to serve in a menial way. So, today we will be spending some time on discussing who is the acharya whom Krishna is talking about in this verse, who, when served in this manner, in this menial manner, will give one, the disciple, the highest benefit or the will serve the highest purpose of the human form of life. So Srila Prabhupada mentions umpteen number of times throughout all his books that the highest perfection of the human form of life or the greatest success of the human form of life is to accept a true bona fide spiritual master and to serve him. But is this the success that we see ordinary human beings engaged in? No, the ordinary human beings of Kali Yuga, their definition of success or their definition of the purpose of life is far from what Srila Prabhupada mentions in all his books. We see that the ordinary human beings are just engaged in ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitri, mamsa. They are just engaged in trying to sleep nicely, trying to eat nicely, then trying to defend themselves nicely by creating so many warfares and creating so many nuclear weapons. And having a very nice sex life, by creating nice beds, and we see all the whole city full of advertisements promoting sex life. So this is how Kali Yuga is progressing right now. And when human beings achieve success in all these matters, ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitri, mamsa, then they feel that they have got success in their human form of life. But it is that ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitri, mamsa, it is very similar. These activities are what even animals perform. They also sleep, they also mate, they also defend, they also eat. So, instead of performing all the activities mentioned over here in the translation, we just see human beings engaged in these sort of activities. In the animal species we see, there is so much of struggle for existence. But human beings today want to fall down to that animal species. In fact, if we see some birds eating grains, like even in a courtyard when we see the pigeons or the sparrows coming and eating grains or some Mahaprasad which has spilled, we see they are continuously looking up and looking around because they are in fear or they are in that anxiety that someone is going to steal my food away or someone will come and snatch my food away or someone will shoo me away. That is always their anxiety. Or even when we see a deer, if he goes to the forest, like there's a river in the forest and he goes to drink water, he's continuously looking up. And he's, why is he looking up? Because he's, you know, he's always fearful that somebody will come and kill me or somebody will come and drive me away from here. Even if we take the case of the king of the forest, the lion, although so far he's the king of the forest, but he's also so much involved in, you know, having a struggle for finding his food. So, in fact, in animal life, in the case of lion, there is a shloka which says, Nahi suktashya kindashya pravishanti mukhe mruga. It says that, you know, it is not that a deer is going to enter the mouth of a sleeping lion. Even a lion, although the king of the forest, has to work hard. He also has to struggle so much to get his food. If he keeps lying down, food is not going to come to him. But usually, in the human form of life, or when we see the normal human beings, we don't see them struggling so much for, you know, safeguarding their food. Like when, you know, human beings are eating prasad, when they are eating normal food, we don't see them glancing again and again up and thinking, oh, somebody will snatch my plate away, somebody will snatch my plate away. That is not the fear that human beings have. But although as devotees, we do have that fear. When we are eating prasad, we feel somebody will snatch my plate away, and for Mahaprasad, especially among Prabhujis, we see that fight happening a lot. In fact, there was an incident which I heard, it was a real incident which happened in one of the temples in ISKCON. There was a very rich lady who had come to one of the Sunday feasts which was happening in the temple. And it was too hot, like in India we know how it's hot during the summer months. And she was feeling extremely hot and she had worn a very nice necklace and come, a gold necklace. So she removed the necklace and she kept it on her lap, but thinking I'll wear it later when I go out of this room to get some fresh air. And then, you know, in the rush of going for prasadam, she did not remember the necklace was on her lap and she just got up and went away and the necklace fell down. And when she went home, she realized, oh, my gold necklace is lost, what do I do? So next day she immediately rushed to the temple. And she went and asked the temple authority, she went and asked at the reception, like someone would ask her, Bangla Mataji, that I had lost my gold necklace yesterday and has someone reported it in, I'm sure, like, you know, it was a gold necklace, I have really doubts, but then also I wanted to check if someone has given it. So the receptionist promptly took it out and gave it to her, saying that yes, somebody brought in your gold necklace yesterday. It was lost in the temple room and one of the persons found it and he reported it in. And she was shocked. She said, my God, in Kali Yuga, you know, if you go out in the streets, especially in India, somebody would have stolen it. But here he is promptly being returned to the reception and I'm getting my gold necklace back. She was very pleased, but she was also shocked at the whole incident. Then after a few days, she again came to the temple and somebody had given her some maha sweets and she had kept them in the temple, like in one corner, and she had gone to the toilet. And again, as usual, she forgot the maha sweets and she went home. Then she thought, no, last time I got my gold necklace back, definitely I'll get it. So she again rushed to the temple and she went to the same receptionist. And she asked him that, oh, you know, you remember me, I had lost my gold necklace and you promptly gave it back to me. This time I've just lost some sweets and they were maha sweets and I was taking it for one of my relatives. So I please want it back if someone has given it to you. And the receptionist said that is a very difficult thing. You know, although the gold necklace was easier to get back, in this temple maha sweets you will definitely not get back. And I myself saw in Bhagavat Katha Prabhu's wedding, like we were all sitting for prasadam and there were a few Prabhujis also who were sitting. And someone went to, you know, one or two of the Prabhujis went to wish Bhagavat Katha Prabhu and Sevamrita Mataji when they were going around to all the tables. And when they came back, their plate was lost. And I remember the Prabhu lamenting that I can't even eat my prasad in peace. Somebody has stolen it for eating Mahaprasad. So, in devotees, we have this problem that somebody will snatch our food away. But usually in human beings, we don't see this problem. They don't have so much struggle for food. And they don't have so much struggle for, you know, always safeguarding their food, thinking somebody will take it away, somebody will take it away. So why is this higher facility given to human beings? Prabhupada says that human being is a rational animal. And, you know, he has to use all these higher facilities and all the senses which have been, higher developed senses which have been given to him for a different purpose, for realizing the true purpose of the human form of life. But we see that human beings usually just use their senses for sense gratification. They degrade, they use it just for degrading lower and lower into the animal species of life. In fact, in animal species of life, we see that there is not so much trouble that animal species have from their own species. Like, we don't see a deer being afraid of a deer, or we don't see a cow being afraid of another cow. Like, a lion deer and a deer eats grass, or a cow eats grass. So, like, you know, they have fear from a different or a higher species. But in only the human species of life, we find that human beings have fear from their own species. And that is a characteristic of human species. They are not so much afraid of anybody else. This Adi Bhautika misery, which is mentioned, for human beings is applicable to their own species mainly. In fact, human beings are not even afraid of, you know, so much of losing their life or anything, but they are normally. But they are mostly afraid of losing so many other things. There is a verse in the Upanishad which says, Bhoge roga bhayam, kule chuti bhayam. What does it mean? That, you know, a healthy person is bhoge roga bhayam. He is afraid of diseases. Kule chuti bhayam. They are afraid of kul means generations. They are afraid of protecting their generations. Or a powerful person, he is afraid of losing his power. Or a wealthy man is afraid of losing his wealth. If we go to an animal and we tell him, oh, you are naked, are you not ashamed of yourself? But usually that is not the problem of an animal. He will say, no, it doesn't matter to me. But a human being is very, very afraid of losing his false prestige, or losing his material possessions, or losing his ego. These are the kinds of things which human beings are afraid of. And in order to protect all these things, he is just wasting, he is using his higher intelligence to just create so much of technology and to create so much of modern things in order to protect himself and to protect his nation. We see he is creating so much of warfare, or he is creating, like, he is throwing bombs on each other. In fact, human beings are the greatest fear that I will be, you know, thrown a bomb on me from other human beings. Like, we know of the bomb blasts which happened in Bombay some time ago. How, you know, the bombs were thrown. They were thrown by human beings. It was not any other species which was troubling these human beings. So this is the advancement which human beings feel they are making. But is this real advancement? No, this is not the real advancement which our scriptures are talking about. In fact, it is said, like, human beings measure their advancement in a way that it is said that first, when human beings thought they had advanced, they used to kill the leader of a country or a society by firing a bullet shot. Then they felt they have become more advanced, so they started using machine guns to kill the leaders of their society. And nowadays, what they are using? They are just using bombs to kill the leaders of society. And this is what they call as advancement. So, real advancement or real purpose of life, as the scriptures tell us, is to come to the platform of spiritual life and to come to the platform of finding a true bona fide guru and serving him in the way it's mentioned in the translation. And out of all these kinds of human beings who are struggling so much for existence and who are struggling so much to protect their wealth, their power, their false ego, their possessions, there are some karmis who after some time of, you know, struggling and creating so much of warfare and technology and all that, they feel that, no, I'm not getting so much happiness from whatever I'm creating right now. So maybe I should seek someone who will give me spiritual guidance. I should go to spiritual life. And then they sincerely start searching out for someone to guide them or for some spiritual authority. They want to come to the spiritual platform. But what do they land up in? They land up in fact, you know, it is said that so many, like, there are so many karmis, but hardly there is one or two who actually start searching for a genuine spiritual master. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu, out of millions and millions of human beings, there is only one or two who will show this interest. But what they land up is, when they find bogus gurus, especially this is so much prevalent in India, they either meet people who speak extremely good philosophy and who have so much of knowledge, but there is no practice of that knowledge. They do not practice what they preach, and they do not walk their talk, as it is said. In fact, their behavior is opposite to the knowledge which they are speaking about. And I was listening to one lecture by His Holiness Suhotra Swami, and he was telling that human beings usually, like most of these bogus gurus, they will keep speaking so much of philosophy, so much of knowledge, so much of vidya, you know, so-called vidya they will give. But they themselves are far, far away from the truth or from the vidya which they are speaking. In fact, he was giving the example of one of his college teachers. His college, that was a religion teacher, so-called religion teacher in his college. But that religion teacher used to come to the class with a cup of tea and a cigarette in his hand. And in between giving the class, he will say a few words and then he'll, you know, smoke and have a puff. Or he'll say a few words and have a sip from his cup of tea. So speaking so much about religion, but his actions were totally opposite to what he was speaking. Or we will find people whose actions are in line with what they are speaking, but even, you know, the speaking is wrong and even the actions are wrong. Everything is nonsense. So, in fact, you know, they speak, like Chuhatra Swami was saying, that they just speak armchair philosophy. Like they sit nicely on the chair, armchair, and they speak big, big philosophy, but no implementation of that philosophy. In fact, last year during Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day in our Bhakti Ruksha, in a Saturday Bhakti Ruksha, we were watching the Your Ever Well Wisher DVD. And in that, the narrator was mentioning that what Srila Prabhupada has actually given us, it's not armchair philosophy. He's given us a way of life. Like what Prabhupada taught, he has actually given us a way of life to how to implement those teachings. So either, you know, they land up in one, the first type of guru who just speaks so much of philosophy and he don't implement whatever they are speaking. Or the second type of guru they land up in is someone who is doing so much of austerity, so much of tapasya, but all that tapasya is useless. In fact, if we go to the Himalayas, we will find, you know, there are so many Babaji, so-called Babaji. They call themselves as Barfani Babas. Barfani means, Barf means ice for, you know, all the people who don't know. So they say, I am the only Barfani Baba who can live in ice for, you know, in not wearing many clothes and who has so much of austerity and who can tolerate so much of cold. But if you see, there will be many such Babas present over there. But if you go to any of these Babas and you ask them their philosophy, what will they say? They say that, oh, we are one, God is one, we are all one with God. That is their philosophy. So much of tapasya, so much of austerity, but wrong conclusion of the scriptures. In fact, when we were studying the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and we were reading the pastime about Lord Brahma, how Lord Brahma came out of the navel of Garbhodakshai Vishnu, and then he didn't know what to do. So he hears the word tapa, tapa, like then the lashing of the Garbhodaka ocean against the stem of the lotus. And in that purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that this tapa, which is being talked about over here, is actually tapo divyam. So Prabhupada explains that just doing tapasya for the sake of austerity or for the sake of, you know, making our body so much tolerant of either too much of heat or too much of cold will not lead us anywhere. It will just make us hard-hearted. If this tapasya is not divyam tapasya, if it is not done for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we find all these Babajis, they will do so much of austerity, but the philosophy is wrong. Then, when, you know, the so-called karmi, the third type of people they land up in, is people who don't have any austerity, who will not do any austerity, neither do have any knowledge. But they claim themselves to be gurus. And, you know, Prabhupada calls them rascal gurus most of the time. So they have just become gurus for prestige or fame. And because they want to amass wealth and they want to cheat the innocent public. In fact, I was just reading a couple of years ago, there was an incident which happened in India. There was a so-called spiritual leader called Kirit Bhai Patania. He claimed himself to be a guru and he had so many followers. And like, you know, the third type of people, not much philosophy, not even doing much vairagya. He was just interested in amassing wealth. So he had amassed so much of wealth from his disciples that he had crores of rupees actually. And then, you know, it is said, there is a popular saying in Hindi which says, Lobhi guru lalchi chela, dono ka narak mein thelam khela. What does it mean? It means lobhi guru means a guru who is very greedy, and lalchi chela, disciple is also very greedy. Dono ka narak mein thelam khela. Narak means hell. So both of them have gone to hell because both were greedy and both cheated each other and both are now rotting in hell. Like Prabhupada says that, you know, cheating gurus will always rot in hell. So this Kirit Bhai Patania, after he had amassed so much wealth, there came up one cheating disciple. And he told his guru that, and even other, you know, rich disciples of the guru, that you all give me all your wealth and I have some very good investment scheme by which I promise 5% return every month on whatever investment you do. Mm-hmm. So Kirit Bhai Patania, instead of, you know, propagating spiritual knowledge, he was propagating, come, we'll all invest in this disciple's scheme, whatever scheme he's telling. And I think they gathered some 30 crores of rupees or something like that. And as we know, usually what happens with a cheating disciple, he ran away with all the money. And now there's a big fraud case on Hiranmay Katania that how he has so much of wealth and whether he gets so much of crores of rupees from. And he's totally fallen down now. So this is the third type of gurus which people land in. And the fourth type of people are the sahajya, who take, you know, things very cheaply, who want Krishna directly but who don't want guru. So spiritual train, but the spiritual train cannot go on one track alone. Like the sahajyas want just one track. They want directly Krishna. They don't want any guru who will chastise them or catch them or correct them. Spiritual track goes only on two tracks. And what these two tracks are? They are guru and Krishna. So we see the Mayavadi or the Jnani, that was the second type of, you know, those austere Babajis whom we meet. They will accept guru alone. Then for them there is no Krishna or anything. They will accept guru alone, and that too only for the time being. And then they will reject the guru after some time, saying that we are all one. So, you know, they don't even have one track. Sahajiyas at least have one track to go on, but Mayavadis don't even have one track to go on. In fact, in Radhanath Swami Maharaj's Journey Home book, I was reading that book some time ago, and in that book also Maharaj mentions on his, you know, spiritual journey, he mentions he met so many so-called bogus gurus who were, you know, either in the first category who had so much knowledge and not any practice of their knowledge, or who were in the second category. He went to the Himalayas and he met so many of these austere Babajis but wrong conclusion of the scriptures. Or even at the third category, like once he was, you know, paying, there was a big queue to pay obeisances to one guru. And as Maharaj was also in the queue, and as his turn came, that guru called Maharaj aside and made him, he realized he's an American. So he made him sit beside him. And while keeping on, you know, blessing all the disciples, all the people who were lining up, he started speaking to Maharaj, "Why have you come to this country?" So Maharaj said, "I've come to seek spiritual enlightenment." And he said, "Why you left America and came? There is so much riches in America, there is so much comfort in America, there is such nice houses, such nice TV and all that. You could have easily enjoyed all these things. Why did you come here to eat these dry chapatis and dal and rice? Have you come here for this?" So see, there are such gurus. He's sitting and blessing. There's a big queue of people, but you know, this is what his thoughts were. So, therefore both tracks are required. In fact, there is a pastime of a Mayavadi sannyasi who was teaching his disciple. And the disciple, Mayavadi sannyasi was sitting on top of his Vyasasana and the disciple was sitting down. And he was teaching the disciple, "Aham Brahmasami, Aham Brahmasami," and the disciple was reciprocating from down. So after some time, this Mayavadi sannyasi felt that, you know, the voice is not coming from down, but it's coming from my side. So he opened his eyes and he glanced to the side and he saw the disciple is sitting to his side instead of sitting down. So he asked the disciple that, "How come you are sitting to my side? You know, you are learning the Upanishad. And what does Upanishad mean?" Upanishad means to sit near the lotus feet of the guru and to learn the shastras. "But why are you sitting at my side?" So the disciple told this guru, Mayavadi guru. He said that, "Guru Maharaj, it is our philosophy, isn't it? That once we start advancing and we come to a certain platform, we all are one, we become one. So now I have advanced, so I have become one with you. So now no longer we are guru and shishya, now we are god brothers." So this Mayavadi thought that, "Oh yeah, yeah, I have only taught this philosophy, how can I now, you know, refuse this philosophy, it's okay, we'll continue." So again they continued chanting, "Aham Brahmasami, Aham Brahmasami." And then after some time the voice had stopped coming. And this Mayavadi sannyasi thought that, "Now why there is no voice coming? What happened?" So again he opened his eyes and he asked the disciple. He said, "Okay, you sat down to my side, but now why you are not chanting with me?" He said that, "Guru Maharaj, I was also thinking that, you know, as we keep advancing, then, you know, we start becoming one. We start, you have only taught me, we start becoming one with God. So why has this long designation, God, brother, let us cut down this brother. Now we both are God. So there is no need for us to sit and practice with Aham Brahmasami, Aham Brahmasami." So much of austerity, so much of, you know, knowledge the guru was imparting to the disciple, but totally wrong conclusion of the scriptures. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam says, "Tat Shraddhana Munayo Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya." And in that verse it is explained that Jnana and Vairagya comes to one who is practicing Krishna consciousness, who is, you know, Vasudeva Bhakti, who is doing Bhakti to Vasudeva. So Jnana and Vairagya will not come, proper Jnana and proper Vairagya will not come to all these people because they are not practicing Krishna consciousness. So we saw that people are either not using the human form of life properly,
or even if you know out of these Maharshi Manushyanam Sahasreshu one comes to the platform of seeking spiritual realization, he ends up in all these different types of bogus gurus. But the real purpose of human form of life, as is mentioned in throughout the Bhagavatam, is to understand the proper conclusion of the scriptures. And what is the proper conclusion of the scriptures? The proper conclusion of the scriptures is to come to the platform of accepting a true bona fide spiritual master. In fact, just 2 days ago I was reading Indradimna Maharaj's latest blog. And in that, Maharaj met one Buddhist monk in the World Parliament religion. And he told him a story about Lord Buddha and one of his aspiring disciples who was seeking enlightenment. And that young boy came and asked Lord Buddha that, are you God? So Buddha said, no, I am not God. So he asked him, are you a saint? And Buddha said, no, I am not a saint. So then this young boy was confused. He said, I have seen Buddha doing so many miracles. So he said, are you a magician? And Lord Buddha said, no, I am not a magician. So then this young boy asked Lord Buddha, then who are you? And Lord Buddha said, I am awake. So Maharaj then told this Buddhist monk that it is so true that most of the human beings are not awake to the real purpose of their life. You know, they are all sleeping on what is the real success of human form of life. But if we see in our sampradaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came as a devotee. He came as a guru. He taught not only that, you know, we should have so much of vairagya, not only we should have so much of vidya, but he taught both. He actually taught us how our spiritual train can run on both these tracks of jnana as well as vairagya. He said, and without any vairagya, this knowledge is useless, and too much of vairagya, no knowledge is also useless. In fact, in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, it is said, Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yoga Shikshartha Eka Purusha Purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripamudir Yastam Aham Prapadye. Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yoga. So Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to teach Bhakti Yoga, he taught both Vairagya as well as Vidya. And he said that only when you practice both these things together can you get Krishna. As it is also said, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyasu Vairagyam Jnanam Charyataha Itikam. By practicing devotional service or by worshipping Vasudeva, Jnana and Vairagya, the person will have both Jnana and Vairagya together. So if one wants to understand the conclusion of the scriptures, one has to have both the things, Jnana and Vairagya. He should practice what he speaks and he should speak what he practices. That is the true definition of a Mahatma. It is said in the scriptures, Vachasekam manasekam karmanekam mahatmanaha Vachasanyate manasanyate karmanayate duratmanaha. So vachasekam manasekam karmanekam mahatmanaha. Who is a true Mahatma or who is a true Guru? Vachas means what he speaks, manas means what he thinks, and karma means what he does. All these things, all these three things should be common. They should be in line. He should speak what he thinks and he should do what he speaks. So, but nowadays we see that, you know, people are either, you know, speaking also nonsense and doing also nonsense, or they are thinking something else but speaking something else. And there is a story of a politician. There was this politician who, you know, in India especially the politicians claimed so many things, but, you know, in their mind their thing is only to get votes. So this politician goes to a village and he tells all the villagers, he thinks I'll, you know, say some sweet words and I'll try to get so much of votes from these villagers. So he starts saying, oh my dear villagers, if you know, I have come here to alleviate your suffering. If you have lost your son, I will become your son. Or if you have lost your father, I will become your father and I will support your family. And then without thinking, he thinks, and if you've lost your husband, I will become your husband. And then you know what happened, all the villagers ran behind him and gave him so much of feeling, because, you know, in India there is still some culture prevalent in the villages. So neither his thoughts nor his words were in line with what his intentions were. But what is a true spiritual master or a true Mahatma? What does he do? He always speaks what he thinks. And there is a pastime of Srila Prabhupada in this. Srila Prabhupada was a true Mahatma, and you know, for a true Mahatma, he always has Krishna in his heart and his thoughts, and he always speaks about Krishna and he also gives Krishna to others. So in this way, his thoughts, his actions, his words, everything is in line.
So Srila Prabhupada was actually waiting on, you know, there were some disciples and Prabhupada was sitting in a chair and I think they were going to go for some preaching program. So they were all waiting to board a bus. And for Srila Prabhupada there was a car waiting. And one of the leaders was telling all the disciples that, come on now, all of you go to the bus, all of the disciples board the bus, board the bus. So he was trying to say that please don't go in the car with Prabhupada, but all of us are going to go, all devotees are requested to go to the bus. So Srila Prabhupada immediately got up and started walking towards the bus. And this senior devotee was a bit shocked. He said, no, Prabhupada, I was not meaning for you. For you there is a car waiting. So Srila Prabhupada says, but you only said, no, that all devotees should go to the bus and board the bus. Am I not a devotee? And you know, so this incident shows that Srila Prabhupada was extremely humble and he always did what he always spoke what he thought and he always did what he thought. So it is mentioned in the scriptures that two things are extremely difficult to understand. One is the Guru Tattva and one is Shambhu Tattva. And why Guru Tattva is difficult to understand? Like in the Srimad Bhagavatam only in verse 27, Krishna is mentioning that know the Acharya to be myself. And even in the scriptures so many times it is mentioned that, you know, Guru is identical with Krishna, Guru is identical with Krishna, or worship the Guru as good as Krishna. In fact, we also had Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's song that Sakshat Dharitvena Samasta Shastre. So worship or honor the spiritual master as much as we honor Krishna. And even the Mayavadi say this, that you know, Guru, Krishna, everyone is one. So there can be a misunderstanding in this and there is a very thin difference. So how is it that the Guru is identical with Krishna? Guru is identical with Krishna because Kintu Prabhoya Priya Eva Tasya. Because he is extremely dear to Krishna. Whatever like the Guru does, he teaches the real purpose of life and he teaches one how not to have sense gratification, how not to gratify your own senses, but to gratify, to work hard to gratify the senses of Krishna. The Guru doesn't want anything for himself. When you know even honor is being offered to the Guru, he is not taking it for himself independently. What he is doing is he is just offering all that honor to Krishna. He is offering all that respect to Krishna. So he is always in line with Krishna's requirements, he is always in line with Krishna's wishes and pleasures. And he always, that is a true guru who teaches the disciple how to give up sense gratification. So there was some guru who was trying to teach his disciple how to give up sense gratification. And he told him the pastime of a king, the story of a king. Now this king was extremely miserly and he did not want to keep any ministers. Because he did not want to pay, he did not want to spend money on a minister. He thought he can only take all decisions, why I need this minister to advise me and all. But because you know the citizens will question, he thought I'll have to, you know, do the act of as if I want to employ a minister. So he advertised that, okay, I'm going to select a minister now. Whoever wants to become a minister, I have this goat with me. You should go and feed the goat nicely. We'll give you the whole day to feed the goat. And if the goat is well fed and then he doesn't eat and want any more, then I will select you as the minister. So many people thought, oh, this is such an easy thing. Because many people were greedy to become the minister. So they said, oh, this is such an easy thing. He's at least not telling us to feed an elephant. So many people came. So one by one they used to take the goat. Full day they'll take the goat to the forest, feed him, you know, night grass, fresh leaves and everything. And in the evening they would bring the goat back and the goat would also eat nicely everything. And the people used to think, oh, I've fed the goat so nicely. Now he's fully fed. Look at its belly. And goats have this characteristic I've seen. If they have eaten well, their belly becomes really huge. So they used to bring the goat back to the king. And the king used to tell the servant, he used to call the servant, okay servant, come here and do your job. So the servant used to come with some leaves and offer it to the goat. And the goat used to go, man, and he used to come and immediately eat the leaves. So the king used to say, that see, how have you fed the goat, you are saying, it is still hungry, it is still wanting to eat this leaf. And the people used to say, like, where the person was aspiring to be a minister, he used to say, no, but full day this goat has been eating, has taken so much effort to feed it nicely. See, look at its belly, it's so huge. But the king used to say, no, still wants to eat leaves. See, when my servant is offering leaves, it's eating the leaves. Go out, you cannot become the minister. Yeah. So like that, so many people kept crying, but the goat always used to, at the end of the day, the goat always used to eat the grass. So there was one clever person, he thought that, you know, I'll have to do something different from what all the other people have done. So he took this goat and instead of taking it to the forest, he locked the goat up in a room. And he had some fresh leaves over there with him, so he, you know, showed the
fresh leaves to the goat. So nah, the goat came running to the leaves. So as soon as the goat came running to the leaves, he withdrew the leaves and hit the goat with a stick. And you know, he kept doing this several times. He will show the leaves to the goat. Goat, animals forget. They have a very short memory. So again the goat came running. Nah, and it came to eat the leaves. And as soon as the goat came near, it gave the man hit him on the head with a stick. So full day he practiced like that. So by the end of the day, the goat realized that no, I should not go to eat these leaves. If leaves are being offered to me, I'll get a hit on the head. So by the end of the day, the goat had practiced that if leaves are offered, don't go to eat them. And the man thought, okay, now I'm successful. So he takes the goat to the king and he says that, you know, the goat is well fed. You offer anything to it, it's not going to eat anymore. So the king calls the servant. Hey servant, come and do your job. So the servant comes and shows some green, fresh green leaves to the goat, and the goat remembers his lesson that no, if I run through this, I'm going to get a hit on the head with a stick. So the goat runs away from there and he just goes in the corner and refuses to eat. So that person says, see, I succeeded, he's not eating anymore, so you should make me the minister now. And the king is really baffled. He says that, but look at his belly, the belly is so small, how do you think you have fed him so nicely? So this person says, no, don't ask me so much of knowledge questions. This is, you know, what you require, I have done. The goat is not eating any more grass, so I should have now become the minister. So what the guru was trying to teach the disciple about sense gratification is that, you know, our mind and our senses are like the goat. The goat, even though it is fully fed, it will always want more and more. And that is how our senses and our mind are. More and more you satisfy, but the senses will always want more and more enjoyment. So this is the definition of a real spiritual master. He teaches the disciple how not to gratify the senses more and more, but gratify the senses of Krishna. So this is what a real spiritual master is, and this is what his real definition of spiritual life is, how to satisfy the senses of Krishna. So the real spiritual master is in love with Krishna, and he does everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And that is why he is identical with Krishna. His desires, his motivations, his aspirations, everything is one with Krishna. Because Krishna is in his heart, he knows what Krishna wants. And similarly, he does all his activities and he makes his disciples also do all their activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And his job is to link his disciples with the parampara and with the panchatattva. Now, if we see the panchatattva also, the guru represents everyone in the panchatattva as well. If we take, for example, Srivast Thakur. Now, who was Srivast Thakur? Srivast Thakur was Narad Muni. And Srivast Thakur is Narad Muni, sorry. And who is Narad Muni? Narad Muni is the spiritual master almost of every personality in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He is such an expert preacher. He is very expert in preaching to, you know, mothers, to children in the womb. He is also expert in preaching to hunters. He is also expert in preaching to big kings. So, you know, Narad Muni, Srivast Thakur is Narad Muni. He is also a spiritual master. And then Advaita Acharya. Now, Advaita Acharya is Acharya. He is the one who actually brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu down. He made Lord Krishna descend as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And also he is non-different from Lord Shiva. Now, it is said in the Bhagavatam, Characharasya Naivarinam Atma Vigranam. What does that mean? That means that Lord Shiva is the guru of all living entities. And Advaita Acharya is not different from Lord Shiva. So he is also a guru. And then Lord Nityananda. It is said that Nityanando Jagat Guru. Lord Nityananda is the Adi Guru. In fact, it is Lord Nityananda who gives us Krishna, who gives us Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Nityananda is not different from Balram. And we know that Balram is the Sandini potency of Lord Krishna. And in the spiritual world, Lord Balram expands as Krishna's shoes. Like when Krishna wants to walk, he expands as his shoes. When Krishna is going out in the sun, he expands as his umbrella to give protection to Krishna from the sun. Or he expands as the Brahmin thread and he's on the body of Krishna. So in so many different ways, Lord Balram is serving Lord Krishna, and Lord Nityananda is not different from Balram. So it is said, without the mercy of Srivast Thakur, we cannot get Advaita Acharya's mercy, and without the mercy of Advaita Acharya, we cannot get Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. And without the mercy or without getting the favor of Lord Nityananda, we cannot get the favor of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or we cannot get the favor of Radharani. And if we take the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he himself is also the guru. He came as a disciple and he taught everyone, all of his disciples, how not to be, you know, the bogus gurus which we mentioned, how not to have just Vairagya or how not just to have Vidya,
but he taught combination of both. And so all of these are spiritual masters, and then we come to Krishna. So it is said in the scripture, Vasudevasutamdevam kamsachanuramardhanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagatgurum krishnam vande jagatgurum. So Krishna is the original spiritual master of all living entities. So thus we see that the bona fide spiritual master is identical with the Lord, because his aspirations, his motivations and are one with the Lord, and because he works for the pleasure of the Lord. And that is, and because he is also taking the trouble of taking all these conditioned souls back to the Guru Parampara and back to the Panchatattva, and ultimately to the service of Radha and Krishna. And therefore, we should not see the spiritual master as separate from Krishna. Why? Not only because of the reasons mentioned that he is identical with Krishna because his aspirations and desires are one with Krishna, but also because Krishna lives in the heart of the spiritual master. It is said, Sadhu nam hridayam toham, sadhu hridaye mayam, that I live in the heart of my devotees. So if one neglects the spiritual master and one tries to go directly to Krishna, like we saw the Sahajiyas sometimes try to do, they don't want Guru or anyone, they directly want to go to Krishna, then we will not get Krishna's favor, because Krishna is himself saying that, you know, I am living in the heart of my devotee. And there is the example of Shurpanakha. She, in the Ramayana, she had genuine attraction for Lord Ram and she wanted to obtain Lord Ram's favor. But what did she do? She approached Lord Ram directly. And whom did she neglect? She neglected Mother Sita. And she was envious of Mother Sita. She actually wanted Mother Sita out of her way. But then what is the result she got? She got the punishment for directly approaching Lord Ram or Lord Krishna without the mercy of the Guru or Mother Sita. She got her nose cut off. So this is what happens to someone who tries to approach Krishna directly without going through the spiritual master. Such a person has actually not understood the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes we see, like, you know, in the rhythmic temples, we sometimes see that people want to go to the Paramaguru or they directly want to go to Krishna. But we are not so advanced that, you know, Krishna is directly going to come and speak to us. Is he going to take his Sribanga, like threefold bending form, and come with a flute and tell us, oh, why did you not do this, or why did you break that regulative principle? Or is it that, you know, like the rhythmic act of the Paramaguru, is it that the Paramaguru is going to walk out of the Vyasasan and talk to us that, oh Prabhu, where were you yesterday? Why you were not sitting in the Bhagavatam class? No, it is very important to have a living Guru, and not only have a Diksha Guru, but also have senior devotees as our Siksha Gurus. Because if we do something wrong in our spiritual life, then they are there to catch hold of our Shikha or of, you know, of our Sari and tell us that, where were you yesterday? Why were you not there in the class? Or did you chant your rounds yesterday? Or are you following the four regulative principles nicely? So that is why it is so important to have a bona fide spiritual master and have Siksha Gurus who will be chastising us, who will be guiding us on the right track in our spiritual path. And you know what is meant by following Guru? Following Guru means following the instructions of the spiritual master. In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, for anyone who used to approach Krishna directly, that don't, you know, if someone comes to meet me and they say that I am a devotee of Krishna, then I don't have time for them. But if someone comes and says that they are a devotee of the devotee of Krishna, then let them come to me. I have time for them. And Srila Prabhupada also used to say that I never felt any separation from my Guru because I was always following the instructions of the Guru. So accepting a Guru and serving a Guru is, in this way as is mentioned in the translation, is also synonymous, is also same as, you know, following the instructions of the Guru. That is the best way when we can, the way we can serve our Guru, especially when the Guru is not present on the planet. So in fact, even we see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, when he is writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he is giving all credits to his spiritual master, Raghunath Das Goswami. And also he says, he establishes the authenticity of Chaitanya Charitamrita by saying that, you know, O readers, please take the words of Chaitanya Charitamrita seriously. Please consider them to be true and please hear them very carefully. And because these are not my words. He is so humble, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He says that these are the words which I have heard from my spiritual master, Raghunath Das Goswami, and these are the words I have heard from the diary of Swarup Damodar Goswami. And therefore this Chaitanya Charitamrita is authentic. So he is humble. Like any of our previous acharyas, if we see, they are giving more importance to guru and following the instructions of the guru. And they are saying that it is more important to go through the guru than approaching Krishna directly by following the instructions of the guru. We see in Prabhupada's life how he implemented these instructions so carefully. We also see in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life how he was serving his Guru Maharaj. And we see in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's example how he is giving all credit to his spiritual masters. So, to summarize, we discussed how the human beings are degrading. They are using all their, you know, facilities which higher intelligence and all the facilities and developed senses which they have been giving just to, you know, for eating, meeting, sleeping and defending, and either to create more modern technology. But out of so many human beings, one person, if he comes to the stratum of spiritual life, then he is landing up in bogus gurus. And here, you know, we saw the two or three types of bogus gurus, some people who have vairagya, some people who have vidya, but they don't, and some people who don't have both and who are just cheating the public, you know, in public for their money. And then he saw how a true spiritual master is one who is identical with Krishna and who is giving us Krishna and who is teaching us real purpose of human form of life, which is to give up our own sense gratification and to serve the senses of Krishna. And we also saw how the guru is identical with Krishna because his desires, his aspirations are one with Krishna. He is always working for the pleasure of Krishna. And we saw how the Panchatattva is actually, guru is representing the Panchatattva, and how it is important to approach Krishna through the Guru Parampara and not approach Krishna directly. What are the pitfalls if we approach Krishna directly? And such a devotee who follows, you know, a true spiritual master and who approaches Krishna directly, he will be free from all fear and he will achieve all success in his spiritual life. As the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Yasya Maishriya Manayam Krishne Parama Purushaha Bhakter Upatyatam Pumsam Shoka Moha Bhaya Paha. Shoka and Moha and Bhaya. So a true devotee who follows the instructions of his spiritual master and of all the Siksha Gurus and he adheres to the instructions, he will be free from Shoka Moha Bhaya. He will be free from fear, he will be free from illusion, and he will be free from all the unnecessary self gratifications which attack him in his spiritual life. And he will achieve the true success in his human form of life, and he will find the true purpose of his human form of life. Thank you very much for patiently listening. Hare Krishna. Granthaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.